Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, not only the best new inventory, but great warranties to go with them. And fabulous pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. So important. And a service department that takes care of everything from routine oil changes, so forth, inspections, and diagnostics, the tough stuff. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Well, time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Shohei Ohtani with his 21st home run of the year.
That's out towards center field. That had a good sound to it. That's got some carry. Back at the wall. It is gone! Shohei Ohtani with a 21st home run, 1-0 Halos.
Well, he got a fastball, and he crushed it to center field. Never an easy spot to hit it out here in this ballpark. But Shohei, great numbers against the Royals in his career.
No Mets highlights.
This is Shohei we're talking about here.
No Mets highlights. The only reason interleague play exists is because of the Yankees and the Mets. Okay? That's the only reason. It's like the only reason the crossover game existed in Legends and Leaders in the Big Ten was so that Michigan and Ohio State could play each other. It's the only reason they put it in. And you give me a highlight of a guy hitting his 21st home run. What's next? A Gleyber Torres bunt?
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
By the way, Sean Clifford said he was there to talk about football. Did not elaborate beyond his original statement last week on the unionization issue. Can I just make one quick point about that before we get to Matt Lombardo? As usual, whenever something comes up, you'll have people say, oh, you've got to concentrate more on the... Like, there's only so many hours you... Okay? On anything. For some reason, people think that you can only lock in on one thing. It's a distraction. It's a distraction if he makes it a distraction. It's a distraction if he takes away from his preparation. I can tell you when talking to him in the offseason, and I have talked to Sean, I want to say four or five different occasions during the course of the offseason. Okay? And he has been locked in on football. Oh, and by the way, he does have some time to do other things. Hey, let's take, for example, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. They do too many TV commercials. What do you want them to be doing? They got to be in the film room. They got to be doing it. Just calm down, okay? Do you do your job in off hours? I mean, the suit's doing fantasy football during the course of Shikalimi games. I mean, you know, he can multitask. No? That wasn't the... Shouldn't have gone that route?
F-O-U-L-E-D. That spells found.
But I always laugh about that stuff. Now, maybe it's because of personal experience. Because, I, you know, for example, I can do this show, and then I can go up and do a game. Right? They're you know, they may be both sports, but they're different. They're completely different things. I've done football and baseball on the same day. I've done basketball and football on the same day. Play-by-play. I've done volleyball and football on the same day. Believe me, you can lock into what you're doing. And I'm just saying that's, for me, I have no problem doing that. I have no problem changing gears and locking in. And for the most part, I assume that about other things. That's just me. But I always get, if a guy's not doing 100% of the football thing, people get panicky. Now, maybe it proves out that he was distracted and he doesn't play well. I don't know. But I've got confidence he's going to actually, if he's healthy, healthy. He'll have a very good season. All right. Does Aaron Judge seem distracted by that shabby arbitration contract he has?
Not at the moment.
Are you winning?
It's been a little bit of a struggle this month, but overall, yeah.
Month's a long time. We're up to the 27th day. You haven't played well. All right.
But it's not because of him. He hit number 38 last night.
Did they win?
No.
It's right up there with Euchre. I hit a grand slam, made the final 12-2. All right. So... Ain't too much individualistic stuff, man. It's really about winning. Team game. Team game.
Always.
Exactly. Oh, boy. Every time I hear that, I think touchdown sugar lemmy. All right. let's bring in Matt Lombardo from Heavy, where he's now the senior writer. Matt, great to have you with us. From Heavy, where he's the senior NFL reporter, Matt Lombardo. Matt, welcome back.
Steve, always great to chat with you, my man. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks so much. So let's get to the column that you put out today, because it was really intriguing. The five best off-season moves. So, and it seems like a lot of them were west of the Mississippi. What did you? What were your takes out of the five best off-season moves?
Yeah, Steve, you look at the AFC West, it's really like one of those great Western run-and-gun shootout movies from the 1960s, right? You think about all of the talent out there, and you look at what the Los Angeles Chargers did, bringing in J.C. Jackson, arguably a top-three corner in the league. Right. They bring in Khalil Mack and pair him opposite of Joey Bosa, so you really improve both levels of the defense, and you had Justin Herbert there, and the Raiders, who went to the wild card round a year ago, they make a trade for who many of my sources and many executives around the league believe that he is the best receiver in the NFL, Devontae Adams. They get better, and you look at the Denver Broncos, who were knocking on the doorstep in the second half last year of a playoff berth. They trade for Russell Wilson, so they have a quarterback. That's going to be one of those divisions where it's must-see TV every week. They're on prime time almost every weekend, and for good reason. And I think that all four of those teams did what they needed to do. And I think if there was ever a gap between the Chiefs and everybody else, I think it's closed.
Is this the best quarterback division in the NFL?
Oh, I think by far, right? I mean, we can look at the AFC North where Joe Burrow resides, and I think that Burrow is arguably the best young quarterback in the NFL. But I don't know that there's a division in football that can compete with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Derek Carr and now Russell Wilson. You look at all of those quarterbacks, they all have tasted some semblance of postseason success outside of Justin Herbert, who's knocked on the doorstep. He might have the best roster around him at this point. Patrick Mahomes has the most experience, and the weapons that Derek Carr now has, well, they might have what it takes to not only win that division, but make a run if they get in.
All right, so Kenny Pickett, I drew the analogy earlier in the show, where I said Kenny Pickett to me is like Drew Aller and Bo Perbula at Penn State. They're two really talented freshman quarterbacks. But there's an established veteran here in Sean Clifford. Well, you know, after the spring, there's no doubt who the leader of the pack is and who's number two. It's Christian Vayu. But the fans want to see the kids. So what about Kenny Pickett? Because in Pittsburgh, he's the, quote, kid they want to see.
Yeah, count me in the camp, Steve, that says let Drew Aller develop, and hopefully next year he'll begin a national championship run up there in Happy Valley. I couldn't be more bullish on that kid and on that program.
Right.
But, you know, as far as Kenny Pickett goes, look, Mitchell Trubisky, I think, is a stopgap at best. I think he's a bridge quarterback at best. And I really like the parallel you drew to the Nittany Lions there, because I don't know that – I think Sean Clifford has more pedigree at this point than someone like Mitchell Trubisky does. And if Kenny Pickett comes in, and obviously it's a big leap from winning the ACC in a down year for Clemson to going in and dissecting and tearing up NFL defenses. Everyone that I talk to is a firm believer that Kenny Pickett has what it takes above the shoulders, that he's has great pre-snap acumen, that he can read defenses, he can make quick decisions, he makes the right throws. But it's the arm strength and the footwork that they don't know that it's quite up to NFL par. So I think that this is going to be, along with what's going on in Carolina, I really think this, the position battle for the starting job in Pittsburgh is as wide open as it gets. Yeah. I think it's going to be one of the most watched position battles in all of training camp around the league.
Which then brings us to Mike Tomlin. Nobody has the longevity in the league as a head coach that he does. Yet this is the first time he's ever had to do this.
Yeah, and I think that you look at the Steelers and kind of the trajectory the franchise has been on ever since they were run out of their building by the Browns in the wild card round 2 years ago. The defense really taking a step back last year. If you're Mike Tomlin, I don't know that you're necessarily feeling the pressure, but if it's close, if you get to August 30th and you're looking at Mitchell Trubisky and he might be a hair ahead of Kenny Pickett, I don't know that I would resist the temptation to playing the kid, because you kind of restart the clock on your tenure by playing the rookie quarterback, letting him go through his growing pains. And with that supporting cast around him, with the Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypools, Pat Freiermuths, and Najee Harris's of the world, you know, he has the supporting cast around him to be fairly productive. It just comes down to, again, how quickly does the game slow down for him? Whereas you know what you have in Mitchell Trubisky, you know what his ceiling is. I don't know that we know what the ceiling is for a kid like Kenny Pickett. Now, if I'm Mike Tomlin, I'd probably be resting my tenure on the unknown versus the stopgap veteran.
All right. You know, when you look at Trubisky, though, he will be the one that that'll bring at least some experience to the table, and I think maybe sitting out last year, and you know, I know he was a backup, but you know, essentially he sat out and he watched last year with Josh Allen on the field, and I'm not so sure that didn't hurt him. So he gave him a perspective on the game.
Oh, I agree, and I think that, you know, sitting there and watching Josh Allen in the same quarterback room as Brian Daboll, who's now the head coach of the New York Giants, you know, absorbing everything, the preparation that Allen goes through, being in that system, in that scheme, getting the reps without the pressure of being the starting quarterback every week. I think it's going to help him. I just don't know that Pittsburgh is the place for him. And, you know, obviously it's a great spot if you're just looking to, in his case, I don't want to say cash a check, but hold the seat warm for the next quarterback. But, you know, playing in a dome, playing in a warm weather climate, given his skill set, given some of his drawbacks in terms of being turnover prone throughout the course of his career and those sort of things, I think playing in a warm weather climate or a dome might have given him more longevity for a starting job than he might have in Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett breathing down his neck.
How do you view Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield in Carolina?
Yeah, I have a real hard time, Steve, believing, even though they gave up next to nothing to get him, only a conditional fifth-round pick, I have a hard time believing the Panthers don't start Baker Mayfield. You know, I spoke to an NFC quarterbacks coach who told me at the moment the trade went down that the Panthers didn't have a competent quarterback on their roster. Now they have one in Baker Mayfield. I think Mayfield offers more upside than Sam Darnold, and I think that if they were comfortable and confident in Darnold this year and moving forward, I don't think that they would have made that trade. And I think that they're already the big winners of that trade, because you look at Cleveland picking up something like $20 million of Mayfield's salary. You look at the fact that they gave up so little draft capital to bring him in. They have so little invested in the quarterback position that at least for this year, there's all kinds of upside, and it just comes down to whether or not Baker Mayfield can be the guy and take that leap and become the franchise quarterback that everybody believed that he had the chance to be when he was chosen number one overall.
All right, Sue Robinson in the end is going to be the one that's going to recommend what the NFL should do. What do you think, in your mind, just on what you know and what you've read and your sources, how long could Deshaun Watson get? Because I'm sure there's, no matter what the grand jury said about Deshaun Watson, there's going to be pressure on the league to at least show they did something. So what do you think they might do?
For sure. And I think that if you're in the Cleveland Browns front office, I think that you have to be preparing yourself for a possible 6 or even 8-game suspension. And I think that's why you've heard some whispers around the league about Jimmy Garoppolo potentially being in play there. I think that they need to keep their options open to find some sort of veteran backup as an insurance policy if they're without Deshaun Watson for 6 games or half a season, because I think that's very possible based on the heinous nature of these allegations, based on the fact that, the NFL has to take into consideration that the Houston Texans settled with so many of these women. They settled so many of these cases. Regardless of what the grand jury says, as you pointed out, Steve, I think the NFL has to send a message here that that sort of behavior can't be tolerated. And I think it could be a pretty hefty suspension coming down the pike.
Yeah, which then puts a lot of pressure on Jacoby Brissett and a lot of pressure on the Browns. They made this deal. Now, they also crafted the deal in such a way where the financial hit would be minimal for Watson, at least in terms of NFL terms.
Right. Very, very significant for the Browns, though, in terms of their commitment.
Yes.
And their hit with the fully guaranteed contract, which just still is a decision with everything that's going on off the field. It's just astonishing to me that the Browns made that kind of commitment, but it goes to show you how desperate they were to land an elite franchise quarterback, regardless of what was going on with him off the field.
It's an exciting time, Matt, that the NFL is back and training camps are starting. And that goes with the column that you wrote today as the senior NFL reporter for Heavy. What are a couple of other storylines that you want to see how they play out in the first 2 to 3 weeks?
I'm fascinated with what's going on in Baltimore and the fact that Lamar Jackson still doesn't have a contract extension. That's certainly going to be something that I'm keeping an eye on. In Philadelphia, one of the stops on my to-be-announced training camp tour, I'm interested in seeing whether or not Jalen Hurts takes a big step forward, because the Eagles are another team that they kind of control the quarterback board next year, right? They have 2 first-round picks that if Hurts makes a leap with A.J. Brown and Miles Sanders and all the weapons around him, they might not need a quarterback and they can build around him. But if Hurts falters, they can kind of control the veteran quarterback market themselves. Julio Jones's health in Tampa Bay is going to be something to keep an eye on. So I think there are all kinds of storylines around the NFL. And I think that, as always, training camp is just such a great time of year to kind of reorient yourself with the league, with the stars, and what could be coming the upcoming season.
Matt, what do you think of Jalen Hurts as a quarterback based on the body of work so far?
I think there's definitely upside there, Steve. I think that, the Eagles and Howie Roseman have done a masterful job of building a really dominant, high-end collection of skill players around him, and they have one of the best offensive lines. I think the excuses are gone now. When you drop A.J. Brown opposite Devonta Smith, when you have Dallas Goedert, when you have Miles Sanders, and you have arguably a top-3 offensive line in the league, I think that this is the year that Hurts needs to prove that he can throw 30 touchdowns and under 12 interceptions, that he can, be a catalyst for the Eagles winning football games and making a playoff run, rather than kind of going along for the ride, which is what last year sort of felt like, especially down the stretch when the Eagles were running the ball so effectively.
Finally, I want to go to the guy I think is the NFL's greatest mystery man, because there's just not a lot of body of work on him, and that's Trey Lance. What do you think about Trey Lance?
Yeah, I think the 49ers have done the right thing, finally pulling off the Jimmy Garoppolo Band-Aid, finally ending that distraction and handing the reins over to Trey Lance. You know, from people that I talked to around the 49ers and around the league, there was a feeling that San Francisco was underwhelmed by Trey Lance last season, and then, of course, he got hurt. This is going to be pivotal for him and for them this summer, and Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, in a lot of ways, are pinning their careers on Trey Lance being an elite franchise quarterback. He's a bit of an unknown. It sounds like he has tore it up in spring. We'll see what happens when the pads go on and the games start counting for real here in a couple of weeks.
Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Of course, Steve. Happy to do it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, and a service department that handles everything from routine oil changes, inspections, and, of course, the tough stuff. It's one-stop vehicle shopping. It is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. All right. You got the Mets again tonight? That's great. I will say the Phillies, of course, they're slumping a bit, and the Braves beat them. Do you realize, I believe the Braves are the only team, maybe it's in the National League, so I'll leave it at that. I think they're the only team in the National League that has not had a three-game losing streak. How about that? You're...
Phillies did beat them today.
Yeah, but so I'm saying, though, the Braves. Yeah, but the Braves have not lost three in a row.
Right.
That's my point. Doesn't matter. They lost today. They haven't lost three in a row. That's amazing. Even though they're not in first place, I don't think a lot of people realize that. And you're on the verge of being swept. All right, so.
The Phillies are now tied for the second wild card spot.
That's good. Really good. Really good. So look, just get in. Once you get in, you can then do some damage. You know, I mean, some places just have a ceiling. They can't get out of the divisional round, but that's, you know, we'll talk about the Yankees later. So what? You're just such an easy target these days. You're so emotional.
I've been told that.
You wear your emotions on your sleeve. You wear your emotions on your sleeve. I think that's fair to say, don't you?
In most cases, yes.
All right, so no real news today out of Indianapolis, you know, except for the fact that P.J. Mustipher passed his conditioning test. That was important. I mean, Jair Brown was there. Sean Clifford was there. P.J., they represented Penn State really well. I listened to them this morning on Sirius with Jason Horowitz and Anthony Herron. And as you know, I think it was, what, 2 weeks ago I was on Jason and Anthony's show. And I'm thrilled for Jason. He's now the new play-by-play voice of the Raiders. That was, you know, and You know, it's interesting. I have not talked to James. I haven't talked to James in, I don't know, 5-6 weeks. And it was just, you know, hey, how you doing? How the girls? Things like that. There was no football talk. You know, there are certain years where I'll pull him aside and say, hey, can you and I talk about a few things? You know, because I want to make sure where he stands on certain stuff. And, you know, if I'm going to go speaking engagements, things like that. And he and I have done that several times. Every time I said, hey, look, you and I need to talk about a couple things. That way I understand where you are. Because when I'm going out to speak to on these speaking engagements as the, quote, voice of Penn State football, end quote, right? I mean, I need to be at least know where the head football coach stands on certain things. And there was really no need to do that with him, but it was interesting listening. And I know Pat Kraft has already said to me twice, he said, you and I need to sit down. I said, sure. You know, and I told Pat that, look, there'll be enough football practices where we can chit-chat, whatever. But he comes out today, and he talks about the fact they've been on the road all these years to start in the Big Ten. And you know how I've hammered that for years. He and I have not had a chance to talk yet. So I'm just glad that, you know, he's out there and he sees it himself. It's something James and I have talked about. But it was interesting listening to James talk about the offensive line. And in listening over the last couple months when I've talked about the offensive line, I've said, I think they have a chance to be really good, but I want to see how it plays out. Because there have been times where you said, I think they're going to be really good, and then the season goes along, and people say, I thought you said they were going to be great. And of course, you know, I didn't say great, I said really good, but that's okay. People hear what they hear. So I've been taking a more, I think they can be, but let's see how it plays out, and I'll give you a better answer as the season goes. That's about exactly what James said today. Like I said, we have not talked about this, and you kind of taken the both have said the same things at different forums, so that was interesting. Because, look, they do have a chance to be good. I think Scruggs has a chance to be one of the top two or three centers in the Big Ten. I think Tangwall showed last year that, you know, even though his best football is in front of him, he has a chance to be very good. I think Olu has a chance to be very good. Wallace had his best spring. Now he needs to take that spring and then see what Cade needs to be. He needs to be a better, more aggressive player. I don't know anything about Norzad except what I've read. Except for saying hi to him, I've never talked to him anything beyond saying hi to him. And I have not watched any of his Cornell tape. Frankly, I'm not interested in watching his Cornell tape. Because, you know, blocking against the defensive tackle from Columbia is not going to blow me away. Okay? But I'm anxious to see how he plays here. The fact that Sal practiced in the spring, actually did contact work in the spring, impressed me. And when Dawkins was out there, I thought he did a good job, and he can play multiple positions. Now it's a question of getting those five guys out there and then maybe mixing in two or three other guys. You know, I want to see how J.B. Nelson, for example, does. So, that's what I want to say. But I just thought it was interesting. He almost verbatim said what I had said. And a lot of times we'll talk. There'll be a specific day he and I will just take and we'll just talk. Didn't do that this time. And we don't do it every year, obviously. The Dennis Dodd story on Cal, Oregon, Stanford, Washington. And then not The Athletic. It is, what's the one that, Brett McMurphy works for now?
Action Network.
Action Network. They threw in Miami, Florida State, and of course Notre Dame's there. I'm going to guess that if you are Cal, Oregon, Stanford, Washington, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, Florida State, Miami, North Carolina, Virginia, you know, you go through the whole list. Kansas, Texas Tech, Iowa State. They've all contacted the Big Ten. So we'll let you know if you're going to go. We'd show some interest. I mean, that's the landscape the way it is. I still firmly believe, despite what the commissioner said yesterday, that the longer the time period goes where there's no movement, there's not going to be any movement unless it's Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame would then open the door maybe to some others joining, at least one other, or others, because now the financial number would be driven up. It should tell you everything. Again, this goes back to, can you enhance? Okay, they can enhance all these places. Cal, Oregon, Stanford, Washington. Okay, can all enhance the Big Ten academically. All right, they're all top-flight academic schools, so that's the given. All, you know, let's face it, Oregon's a really good football school. Walked into Columbus and beat Ohio State last year, so obviously they're really good. Stanford has had some really good moments. Washington was going along really well. Then when Peterson decided to step aside, they've struggled since the last couple of years. But Washington's been a really good brand. Cal is not. But here's the statement that should tell you everything as to why the Big Ten should not go that direction. And that is this. If they stay together as the Pac-10, they would get an estimate. This is according to, obviously, and Dennis Dodd put this together, so through his sources that are connected with media and rights holders. The remaining Pac-10 schools would get an estimated $21 to $30 million per school annually. Do you know what they get now as the Pac-12? 34. So if these brands are so powerful, Cal, Oregon, Stanford, Washington, in a new TV contract where normally you get increases, wouldn't, if they're such great brands, and by the way, I think they are really good brands. Oregon's a really good brand football-wise. Washington's a good brand. Stanford. Right? But if they're that powerful an entity, why, if they stay together, are they going to get less money? What does that tell you about why the Big Ten shouldn't do this? Unless Notre Dame says yes. If Notre Dame says yes, now it does change the dynamics as to how big a conference you are. If they're such great brands, why will the Pac-10 get less money per school if they stay together? $21 to $30 million? You're getting $34 now. That would mean if they went to the Big Ten, they would reduce everybody's number because they would dilute the number. That statement tells you everything. Again, if the Big Ten's going to be between $80 and $100 million per school, anybody you add or any combination you add has to make that end up being between 85 and 90 and 105 to 115 million a school. It's got to increase the number for everybody. It can't dilute the number. And I've said that a lot, I know, but I've got to keep hammering it home because I think that's the difference. There's also the idea of management. 16, there's only one entity that's ever tried to manage 16, in college, and that was the Western Athletic Conference. The Western Athletic Conference, of course, very, very spread out. But they couldn't make it work, and eventually eight schools broke away and formed the Mountain West. I mean, the Big East got huge between football and basketball. They couldn't manage it. They got huge between football and basketball. The Big East had, I don't know, 17 members, I think, at one point. Finally, the Catholic schools had enough after Pitt said, hey, we should reject the $1.1 billion. And that was Pitt. It's in Daniel O'Neill's book. Okay, so I'm not talking out of turn here. Dana, who researched that to the hilt. Okay? It was Pitt that said, no, we're not going to vote yes on a $1.1 billion deal with ESPN. Once again, you don't take financial advice from that group. Eastern All Sports Conference, no. $1.1 billion from ESPN, no. You're 0 for 2, man. But that's when the eight Catholic schools broke away. They were done. So there's an idea that you can be too big, and it becomes very difficult to manage. You've got 16 schools and some of the greatest power brands out there. Penn State football, Ohio State football, Michigan football, USC football. To add in with UCLA, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan State. That also end up being some great brands in basketball. Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Purdue, Wisconsin, Indiana, USC, UCLA, all great basketball brands. Iowa's a really good basketball brand. You have a lot of things going your way now. And you can craft a number anytime you want based on the brand you have. And if you can manage it, which I think at 16 you can manage this, especially in this day and age, and with the amount of money that will be brought in from the various entities, because there'll be a new college football playoff contract. And when that college football playoff contract comes out, whether it's 12 or 16, the goal is going to be, as Kevin Warren properly said yesterday, multiple TV partners for that, which will drive the number up. That means everybody's going to get more money from that too. So that allows you, because you have the capital to do it, that you have the income to do it, you can more easily manage 16 schools. Now, do you want to take on managing 20? I think there becomes a point where you ask yourself, what's too many? Can less be more? And can less also mean a far more efficient management structure? Those are all questions that, you know, if I'm sitting in the room, I bring up. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Is Aaron Judge in the lineup tonight? I mean, several other Yankees have quit and have decided not to play.
Yes, he is in the lineup tonight. The two hole as per usual.
Stanton, no. Garrett Cole, no. Are you guys even trying?
You know what? I actually had that question last night when Aaron Boone thought it would be a great idea to pinch hit with Joey Gallo.
He's a big power bat. See, you know, it's interesting. Somebody brought up O'Neill Cruz to me today. So I was looking at Cruz. You know, Cruz hit a big home run last night. Exit velocity, 111. Somebody tell me what the difference is between an exit velocity of 111 and an exit velocity of 98 when they both are home runs. Except for the wow factor, what's the difference? If they both cleared the wall. Except for the wow factor. But Cruz hits a huge 111-mile-per-hour home run, right? So I haven't really looked at his numbers. You know what he's hitting? 221. He's got 42 strikeouts to 25 hits. Really? Really? Now, if he had 25 hits and 25 strikeouts, I'd be like, all right, you know. Because think of it in this context, full season, 160 hits. 160 hits is a good season, right? I mean, 200 is kind of a wow. But 160, good season, right? But do you want to be striking out 160 times? If I get a guy with 160 hits, I hope he's only getting 100 strikeouts. He's got 25 hits and 42 strikeouts. Now, look, he's just a kid. But let's not go overboard here. Those aren't good numbers. He does some wow stuff. You sit back and go, whoa, wow. And he does some other stuff and makes you go, whoa, boy. Because he's a kid. He's a kid. All right. How many times has Luke Cotrillo struck out when it comes to the T-ball?
Oh, it's been several times.
And you yell at him.
Well, it just needs to work on his grip on the bat. We're trying to swing with one hand. We need to swing with two hands. That's what we're working on right now.
Lisa, I'll talk to him. All right. And Lisa, and I don't mean Luke. He's two.
That's right? What she told me the other night when we were working
He's
on that in the yard.
Two. He's two. Okay? Let him be two. All right? God, he's not Derek Jeter. Just let him go. It's all right. God, I realize, like, to some people, Mega Millions on Friday night is their pension plan. I realize this kid's your pension plan. I got it. Okay. We'll come back with more tomorrow. Exactly. That's from Mark here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.